Welcome to the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We are checking in from the NFL Scouting Combine in Indianapolis. We is Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish, and we got our producer Dan Mott here as well. The whole Pro Football Weekly contingent is down in Indianapolis, and Eric, it's been a bit of a whirlwind week, as it always is, but we're having fun so far, right?
Yeah, I'm appreciating your kind of mellow sort of Sunday coffee house kind of voice this week. I like it. It's cool.
We're recording in one of the hallways right. of this giant Indianapolis Convention Center, so I'm just trying not to interrupt more people than I normally do, or disturb more people than I normally would, I should say. So, Eric, I think we can safely say that we're probably having a better week thus far than guys like Orlando Brown, the Oklahoma tackle, and certainly Billy Price, the center from yep. Ohio State. It's been rough for them, and although we might even feel like we're walking on clouds, probably not quite like Penn State's Saquon Barkley or Notre Dame's Quentin Nelson, a couple of the guys that have jumped out on the other side of the spectrum here.
Yeah, let's start with the bad news. Billy Price, highly rated center, has played some guard as well. Yep. Possible top 50 picks, suffered a pectoral injury on the bench press. I actually was just happened to be walking up when it was happening. You know, this is a guy people thought could put up 40 reps. You yeah. know, I mean, he was such a weight room workout warrior, whatever I was trying to say there. But an incredibly strong dude. And after the third rep, he racked it. He grabbed his left pec. He knew something wasn't right. Found to be partially torn. We'll have to find out the end result of that. It doesn't necessarily sound like it's going to knock him out of the draft or anything absurd like that, but it's right. going to hurt him, you know. And so in Orlando Brown, you mentioned, you know, big kid, son of a former left tackle for the Browns and Ravens, had a great career, you know, a generation ago. Yeah. It just didn't work out well. And we're going to have to look at his tape and say, is he good?
Right. I don't think Orlando Brown weighs 360 pounds.
He's
I don't think anyone
guy.
Expected him to come in here and be a dancing bear. That's not really what he is. But I think we can probably now say, Eric, that he's not likely an NFL left tackle either. Is that
or if a first he was rounder? Even, yeah,
right. Yeah, we had a Greg Gabriel, our draft expert, did have a first round grade on Orlando Brown. It's an interesting year because it doesn't seem like there is a consensus top tackle prospect, at least not yet, that's emerged. Maybe that'll change. Maybe Connor Williams is showing out to the point where he is in that conversation. Colton Miller, I don't know that he's going to be the first tackle, the right. UCLA guy, but he has had an excellent week, broke the combine broad jump record and ran a pretty fast 42. So, you know, like you said, this just means the teams will have to kind of go back to the tape and see where things stand as far as they're concerned. Let's stick with the injury for just 1 minute and Billy Price. If you're an NFL, well, two sides of this. A, if you're an NFL GM, does this signal a potential opportunity for you because you already know what type of player this is? Or is there now sort of a, I don't want to say a buyer beware, but an additional kind of red flag, an injury check, if you will, next to his name that you potentially even worry about longer term?
Obviously, if there's a team that either has extra picks or has a roster that's in great condition, you can maybe use a lower pick on Price if he's at that spot and I don't know, a third round or whatever, let's say. And then decide, okay, when do we think he's going to be ready? Do we start him on the PUP list? Do we think he's going to be ready at any point during his rookie year? If you lose an entire year, that has a significant effect on his draft status. So right. we'll find out. But we've seen cases in the past of injured players dropping and then teams taking advantage of it to that degree and getting a good player as long as they're willing to wait.
Sidney Jones immediately comes to mind, had the pro day Achilles injury last
yep.
year, fell into the second round with the Eagles, and we'll see. I know he's in their plans moving forward. We don't quite yet know.
Yep.
Jake Budd is another example. He got injured in the bowl game and ended up falling, to the fifth or sixth round of the Broncos,
yep.
the tight end from Michigan.
And so. The Notre Dame linebacker, I'm blanking on, Jalen Smith,
of course.
Thank you.
Yep, another bowl game injury. And, yeah, great point. Obviously, he was a top five, top ten talent, ended up dropping to, 35 or 36 to the Cowboys. And, I think they'd say they're pleased with how his second season turned out. So,
mm-hmm.
Eric, the other side of it, we kind of wondered with the pro day stuff and some of the unfortunate injuries. Fabian Moreau comes to mind last year as well. Are agents going to be – does this change anything for them and how they're advising their clients? And could we see a potential shift somewhere down the road where prospects are deciding this isn't worth their – it's just too big of a risk for them, and you use my tape and use my pro day workout, and that's what you're getting?
Yeah, that would have to require a pretty confident agent and a confident player who had enough good tape and came from a high-profile program and was projected to go high enough. And, you know, you see Sam Darnold opting not to throw. It's apples and oranges, but it's one example of a player saying, hey, I'll do this stuff. We had other guys not lift yesterday and say, hey, I'm going to do it at my pro day. So there are instances where this does occur, but it still isn't the prevailing way people go about it. And, sure, you know, you just, it's a risk. People may hold it against you more than they should. I don't know.
So it's been an eventful week. The way this is always set up is the coaches and the GMs are loaded on Wednesday. We're taping here on Friday, so we heard from a ton of coaches and GMs on Wednesday and a smaller amount Thursday, and only a couple trickled into Friday as the prospects started talking actually on Thursday. Is there one or two stories? It felt like a kind of a newsy day Wednesday. Again, we're taping here on Friday, but anything that kind of jumped out at you? I know you wrote about the Eagles and Nick Foles, and you wrote about the Vikings quarterback situation, but is this coaches and GMs saying as little as they can? I know it's that, but were you able to kind of make anything more of any of those stories?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there were a few GMs that year in and year out, I think, are willing to be a little bit more transparent than others, and some people who don't, you know, aren't too concerned about sort of hiding their truths. But, you know, I think it's clear that there are some teams that are at this point of the offseason where they have a lot of pending decisions. Seattle would be one of those teams, and you know, there's certainly others. And I think, you know, news-wise, I don't think it's notable that the Browns say their first pick is up for trade. I think everybody kind of assumes
it's an annual
those.
Tradition, right?
Yeah, everybody says that. Hey, we're
both the Browns picking first and saying.
Yeah, well, that's true, right? There are two elements to this, right? Yeah. But I mean, yeah, phones are always open. You seldom hear teams say, "Nope, we got our guy on, February 28th, and we're locked in, and nothing's going to change." Could that be the case in retrospect? Yes, but yeah, it's kind of how it always goes, I guess, around here.
We also mentioned Saquon Barkley and Quentin Nelson on the having a good week thing. Actually, Quentin Nelson tweaked his hamstring early Friday and didn't run the 40, but it didn't sound serious. He was going to participate in the rest of the drills. I don't think that's any major concern. Eric, I don't know what type of concerns there really can be about either of these guys as just pure players, and Barkley has just been destroying this combine. 29 reps on the bench press, tied Nick Chubb for the high among all running backs. They weren't that far off of some of what the offensive linemen were doing on the high end of that scale. And then Quentin Nelson is, he measured what teams needed to see to potentially view him as a tackle even.
I agree.
He's kind of checked all the boxes thus far, too.
Yeah, I mean, Connor Williams, as good as he is, I mean, some people say maybe you put him at left guard, you know, and now
just
Nelson's
short-armed,
big.
Yeah.
Yeah, short-arm guy and you know, could work in the right kind of system. But, you know, and so maybe people are rethinking these things, or at least open to the possibility of shifting positions. So, yeah, I mean, it you know, whereas with Orlando Brown, for example, like you said, maybe he is strictly a right tackle or a right guard in a you know, kind of man blocking scheme or something like that. So yeah, I mean, unfortunately, these workouts can change the narrative a little bit, sometimes in a very positive way, like with Nelson. Maybe that pushes him into the top five. Maybe the flexibility with Williams helps him out, but also the negative in terms of what these guys can't do. So it is fascinating to see how these workouts do change the way some people look at these guys.
I think there's a lot of interesting sort of elements of this draft. You got all the quarterbacks. They always seem to be polarizing, but of course it'll be preceded by a free agency period, unlike any we've seen in recent years with the Kirk Cousins sweepstakes and a couple other, you know, likely starters switching teams. But something we were talking about just a little bit yesterday that continues to kind of intrigue me: what about Nelson and Barkley in both of them playing positions that you don't typically see drafted in the top five in the conversation for, you know, Barkley, I think, is at least in the conversation to go first overall. I don't think it'll happen, but
yep.
It's unique, though, with those two positions, and it's kind of an extra thing that teams are going to have to weigh. This may be the best available player, but I got to make sure I'm aligning value positional-wise as well.
Yeah, there's positional value, and then there's individual value, and, you know, there's no question teams value quarterbacks high, pass rushers high, great coverage guys high,
yep. Yep.
You know, all those sorts of things. And then you know, we had that one year where it was Eric Fisher first,
right.
Luke Jokel second, you know, Lane Johnson fourth. That was a bit of a different year. We don't typically see those kind of years where kind of, you know, it's usually a pass rusher or quarterback first, very rare exceptions here and there. But, Yeah, this could be a year where it looks a little different at the top, even with, you know, five possible first-round QBs.
I'm trying to think. So that was 2013. I believe that was E.J. Manuel as the first quarterback, I believe.
16th?
In the low
team.
That
sound right?
Yeah, right. But, yeah, that's unique. We could see probably, I would think, at least four quarterbacks off the board by 16 this mm-hmm. year. And this is interesting timing of us taping. We haven't heard from the quarterbacks yet, Eric, but what do you want to hear? We got to talk about Lamar Jackson. I mean, he continues to be the discussion. I guess it was, 2 weeks ago now that Bill Polian said, oh, it would be in his best interest to just switch to wide receiver. And there have been lots of suggestions, inferences based off of what Polian said.
Right.
What do you want to hear Jackson say? And what do you think he – I don't know, just where you kind of add on the whole Lamar Jackson debate at this point?
I'm going to go up and ask him and say – are you willing to work out a wide receiver? Do you think there's any, you know, do you intend to work out a receiver? Yeah. And what is your, you know, why do you think teams are looking at you that way? I just want to know. I mean, I think he's a quarterback. I think you train him and draft him and develop him as a quarterback.
Yeah.
I've seen enough to believe he's got a unique skill set that most guys don't have, and you can exploit it in different ways. If he flames out at quarterback, would he be willing to change positions in 3 or 4 years to save his career? Tim Tebow wasn't. And that's why he's not playing.
Right.
Because he was a terrible quarterback. Could he have been that pass-catching tight end or H-back? Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, so I think it's sometimes when people ask, would you play wide receiver, it may be a plan B. Most quarterbacks don't have a second position. He's never played wide receiver, but, boy, it would be fun to see what he would be on the field as a non-quarterback. I'm just saying selfishly, I'd love to see him catching passes, running kicks, you know, whatever. I mean, again, I don't even think that's his long-term position, but this is just – we've been amplifying Bill Polian. Hall of Famer, whatever, he's got his credentials. But I think people are making it sound like every single old-school evaluator thinks the same way. I don't think that's true. I think we've given too much of the perspective that, oh, these are just guys who are racist and they want this and they want that and they don't see him as a quarterback. Most people we've talked to down here view him as a quarterback. That's all I'll say.
Yep. You're absolutely right. And that makes two of us on this podcast that view him that way as well. And this all started, Polian said he was too short. I don't know if that was...
But Johnny Manziel should be a top five pick,
he said.
Right.
And I believe Lamar Jackson checked in right about what Mitch Trubisky did last year, the number two overall pick.
Good point.
He cleared 6'2". Baker
Trubisky
Mayfield.
Was a little thicker, but basically the same.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And these kids are going to have to get in this strength and conditioning program, even some quarterbacks where you worry about if they're a little, you know, thin on the lower body. And,
yeah, that's exactly
that takes
right.
Time.
Jackson has very thin legs.
Yep.
Some people have pointed that out and said, does it worry me a little bit? Could he be more prone to injury? Could he be sort of a Tyrod Taylor guy who's always sort of fighting to get through a season? He could. And that's one of the worries you have. Now, he could still be that injury-prone guy at wide receiver, too. So it's one of those unfortunate deals. But I don't know. I mean, I'd love to try him at quarterback. I can't wait to see a team invest in him at that position. If they have to switch gears, maybe they could.
Well, it's no doubt that he's a unique talent and that it's a unique situation and that the team that drafts him, they better have a plan. And that's almost cliche. You hear it all the time this time of year, but it's very true. If a team doesn't have a plan and they're going to draft Lamar Jackson late in the first, early in the second to play quarterback, well, they're probably wasting their own time and his, because it's just you got to know what you're going to do and you got to feel good about kind of the incubator that you're going to place him in.
Yep.
Hopefully a long-term one, too. I don't think teams should be looking at Lamar Jackson as their 2018 starter early in the season. That's probably not ideal. Not to say he can't succeed, but I think there's both development as a quarterback and as we talked about physically that's going to need to occur. So, but as Eric said, not everyone down here agrees with Bill Polian. Ozzie Newsome said today, certainly an old school, longtime talent evaluator. Lamar Jackson is a quarterback on their board.
On our board,
Ozzie
yep.
said that.
Yep.
Andy Reid, another guy who has a ton of pull when it comes to roster decisions, has been doing this a long time, has worked with some pretty good quarterbacks, kind of chuckled at the premise that you move Lamar Jackson to wide receiver. So,
yeah, you remember Donovan McNabb. People thought he was a terrible pick, and Andy proved people wrong with that selection, even though I wasn't the biggest McNabb fan. You know, that's a good example of Andy seeing things in a way where other people were scoffing at it, and it worked out pretty darn well for him.
Yeah, I would say so. So we're anxious to hear from Lamar Jackson here in a couple hours, and certainly check the site, profootballweekly.com. Eric's going to be writing on Lamar. We'll be writing on all the quarterbacks. Josh Rosen, another highly anticipated one. Like I said, it's polarizing groups, so it'll be interesting to hear what some of these guys say. Lots of Josh Rosen's teammates were stumping for him once again. Yep. We heard that in Mobile, Scott Quessenberry, his center, he kind of doubled down on that yesterday and saying all this stuff he hears about the off-field crap and that he can't galvanize a locker room. Well, he called it, you know, crap. I don't know what it is, obviously, but
yep.
So that'll be interesting to hear from him as well. Check out the Pro Football Weekly podcast on iTunes. I should have mentioned that sooner. Subscribe to us over there. Leave us a rating and a review. We got about 10 minutes left. Eric, what do you think about the Indianapolis nightlife this year at the Combine? We've been having some fun. I think we've been dragging a little bit during the day. But
sure.
It's been cool.
Yeah. No, it's always a good scene here, and it's always good to sort of see what people are talking to whom and you know, maybe what people aren't talking and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's a good host for the Combine. I know at some point it'll get moved to L.A. or Vegas or wherever else, but I always do appreciate Indiana for what it is, you know, and this city has embraced the Combine and vice versa.
Yeah, no question. So what else? Pro Football Weekly won't be here throughout the entire weekend. We'll start getting the defensive prospects. Again, we'll be covering it all on the website, but we won't be here all weekend to hear these guys. But who else are you interested to hear from, either a position or certain prospects? What else? Who's got lots to prove? You wrote about it for our newsletter. You wrote about it on our website. What are the big questions that still linger here on Friday afternoon?
Yeah, some of these defensive backs. I mean, you know, you sit there and kind of try to figure out who the first corner is. Is it the Iowa kid, Josh Jackson? Is it somebody else? There's some pretty good depth at the position. You know, some of the safeties and interchangeable parts. I mean, Derwin James could be a special player. But the injury and just sort of the uncertainty about what exactly he is, there might be some worry there. And you know, and I guess sort of Minkah Fitzpatrick, and you know, you talk about having a plan for a guy like with quarterback. I think it's fair with a defensive back who could maybe figure in at two or three spots. Look at the Cowboys with Byron Jones. They're now moving him to cornerback after spending a few years at safety.
But Jason Garrett said it's not disappointing. They view it as an asset.
And honestly, it could be. They probably should have at least tried this earlier on, where he's got those long arms. Maybe he can be that press guy. But you're starting from square one now. You know, so I think having a plan for a DB is good, too. And you know, look at, I don't know, let me think. Patrick Chung flamed out his first go-round.
Sure.
He's ended up being a pretty good player because they use him a little differently. So, I don't know. It's so funny to think about how guys can develop at different rates. Yeah, but you also have a team. You have to have a team that supports you and knows what to do with you.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Fitzpatrick is also, I don't want to call him a tweener because I think he can probably thrive in all two or three of those different roles. But again, it'd be interesting to see how teams view him and how it affects, you know, if a team only views him as a nickel corner, you know, you could probably forget about the top five discussion, I would think. And so we'll have to see how that kind of projection comes about. A couple physical marvels, Eric, at the linebacker position who checked in today and their measurables were confirmed as pretty rare stuff in Leighton Vander Esch and Tremaine Edmonds, two guys who are extremely exciting. Edmonds, especially at 19 years old, and it just seems like there is so much untapped potential with what he's going to have a chance to become in the NFL.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny you brought those two guys up because we're doing this a little bit in an unscripted way. But yeah, those two.
No, not us.
I know, not us. No, but I'm glad you did. It was perfect because I actually talked to somebody. I forget what night it was now. They all kind of blend together. But I was talking to an evaluator who I brought up that question. I said, if I just threw those two guys out there, what positions do you see them at, whatever? And I guess this would have been early in the week. And so it seems like there's maybe some real hot buzz about Leighton Vander Esch, but then also some people who aren't all that enamored with him. I was a little surprised. I thought there was a little more general excitement about him, but there's some who aren't maybe thrilled with him so far. And then, you know, it's with Edmonds, it's, boy, what could he be in 4 or 5 years? You know, some of these guys are 23, 24 years old coming out. He's going to be 20 in May. He'll be drafted at age 19, and he's already got good tape out there. So, yeah, the measurements are there. There's enough tape on both to get really excited. So, I don't know. They're two of the more interesting guys as we get a little bit past that first wave of the draft. And by first wave, I mean, you know, the first 7 or 8 picks, and then you could start thinking about Edmonds maybe.
Right, yeah, it seems like Vander Esch probably still slots into the second half of round one, and
right,
as you said, Edmonds, especially if someone thinks they're getting the next potential great edge rusher, not something he was necessarily asked to do very often. in college, but that could certainly change. And certainly when you check in at, 6'6", I don't have his measurements in front of me, but they were exactly what people were hoping to see there. So just a few minutes left on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We are reporting from the Combine and getting ready to chat with the quarterbacks here in a little bit. So let's just wrap with the quarterbacks and kind of go back to maybe the Josh Rosen and Josh Rosen discussion.
Rosen.
Is he getting maybe not quite enough love amid this sort of, a clouded or a congested pack?
Yeah, I think so. It's like, you know, everyone talking about, okay, Sam Darnold, he could be the first pick. And, you know, everyone knows about the Baker Mayfield buzz. We've talked about Lamar Jackson. You know, he's obviously, you know, there's a huge debate about that. Josh Allen, you know, his meager stats and enticing upside and all that. Meanwhile, Rosen, just to me, is the most polished of the group. I mean, he looks like an NFL quarterback right away. And does he have some weaknesses? Sure, all these guys do. But for me, if I felt like I wasn't going to be able to get a veteran in free agency or by trade, whatever, and I had to require my rookie quarterback to start, Josh Rosen, to me, is the most NFL-ready of this group. And so he could come out here and sling it. He could do the same as Pro Day. And that hopefully the conversation goes back to, man, this dude is pretty good. let's not forget it. So I don't know, man. I really like the guy. I don't know if he'll ever be a superstar, but, boy, he certainly looks the part.
Do you worry about the durability? I know he was banged up throughout his UCLA tenure. And it is, you know, as well as he played, he has impressive numbers. UCLA wasn't a very good team. Some people will kind of hang that partially on him, maybe just because he came out such a highly touted prospect, and I think in some people's estimation maybe never quite matched that those projections.
Yeah, I mean, didn't always have the best talent around him. Sometimes there were some good performances. You know, I think his defense was really, truly awful. And you saw him, when he made mistakes, I always felt like it had good intentions. He wasn't just sort of throwing the ball for grabs. He was throwing picks down 2 touchdowns early in the fourth quarter, like where he felt like he had to make a play to rally his team. I know that's not excusing him. I just watched him thinking he just had such an aggressive mentality there. So, yeah, did he not live up to some of those expectations? He didn't. But he also hit some, and I think you saw enough of him that where it was like, I like this, the fight in this guy, and I think there's a reason why he – you know, made some of the mistakes he did, and could be chalked up to his team not being great.
Like I said, we'll be covering all this at ProFootballWeekly.com. We are about to wrap up here, but I'll leave you with this, Eric. I believe it was actually you who said it's always something with Baker Mayfield.
Yeah.
What can we expect from Baker? What's going to be new? What's going to be kind of the angle here that maybe we weren't expecting heading into his press conference Friday afternoon?
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, obviously, I'd like to see his workout, and I mean, he'll test pretty well athletically too, and everything. And but yeah, he's sort of got this. You know, people talk about Rosen being kind of a tricky guy personality-wise. I mean, Baker Mayfield's the same way, you know, and so not the same way. He's got that enough of a personality quirk in him that some teams may be turned off on it. Some teams may love his competitiveness.
Right.
You know, they're different guys, of course, but, I mean, I just man, he's fun. He is fun. He also is going to give some people some headaches. there's no question. So did Brett Favre, you know, and that's the example I've used. I don't know that he's Brett Favre good, but you know, Brett Favre, for as happy-go-lucky as he appeared in front of the cameras, he was also a guy that had to be managed at times behind the scenes. He was, you know, reckless and out of control. So we'll see. He's not going to fit personality-wise for every team, but boy, it's going to be fun to watch that ride. I think so.
The throng of media that was there to cover Saquon Barkley on Thursday was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And something tells me we haven't seen anything yet when it comes to some of these quarterbacks and Josh Rosen and Baker Mayfield. So we are looking forward to going to cover all that shortly. That's going to do it for the Pro Football Weekly podcast from the Scouting Combine. Don't worry, we'll be back early next week to break it down. I'm sure we'll have winners and losers and more reaction to what occurred here in Indianapolis, but we really appreciate you being with us. He is Eric Edholm. I'm Arthur Arkish. A big thank you to our producer, Dan Mott, who has been hustling like crazy this week to make sure all of our video and podcast things get to you in a timely fashion. So we really appreciate you guys. And one more reminder to go check us out on iTunes and subscribe. Leave us a rating and review while you're there. The Pro Football Weekly podcast, the Pro Football Weekly Bears podcast. We got a fantasy one as well. So we hope you enjoy them all. You enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you very soon.